It's the ERP Confab. I'm David Essex, industry editor at Search ERP, with my colleagues, news editor Jim O'Donnell and Brian McKenna, business applications editor at Computer Weekly. Industry clouds are all the rage as ERP vendors hype their specialized offerings for industries such as healthcare, manufacturing, and retail. But are industry clouds all that different from the vertical market ERPs that have been around for years? And what about the essential role of ERP partners, system integrators like Accenture, Deloitte, and EY, and public cloud hyperscalers Alibaba, AWS, Google Cloud Platform, and Microsoft Azure? It seems like for about the last year and a half, most of the ERP vendors and the hyperscaler public cloud providers, some of them have announced industry clouds. These are cloud products that are specific to certain industries like retail, healthcare. And so I'm wondering what to make of all of this. It's clearly a trend, but it also has a bit of the whiff of the marketing wrapper. So it's real, but both as often as the case, it seems like it's real, but it's also kind of positioning their products in a different way, maybe to address a shortcoming, perhaps.
Industry clouds are, you know, all the rage, bit of a hot topic. I commissioned a feature fairly recently from one of my regular freelancers, Mark Ambasna-Jones. Did a good job of this feature, which kind of addresses that question. I mean, industry clouds are all the rage, but are they driven by marketing, or is this something that customers really, really want? And in the end, after, you know, more detail than I can do justice to here, he came down to saying industry clouds are marketing, but they are also highly focused on customer needs. They're a formalization of products and services perhaps already existed, but are being packaged more neatly for customers, that is to say enterprise IT buyers, to consume, which kind of makes sense. I've been having a bit of a think about this, and I don't know if this will be all that helpful, but I think really there are two forces here. On the one hand, you've got the rise of the hyperscalers, and let's face it, 5 to 10 years ago, you barely knew who they were. They are very technologically dominant now. And public cloud provision has also become much more accelerated during the pandemic. So that's given them another big boost. So you've got that on the one hand. And then on the other, you've got the kind of application vendors, but also the data management type vendors as well, all of whom are, you know, under pressure to deliver value to their customers, which is particular. It's really kind of to do with their particular customer needs and so on. But facing a pressure for cloud delivery that's coming from the hyperscalers, from the demands of CIOs who've now seemed to become very enthusiastic about cloud in a way which maybe they weren't 10 years ago. And because of these pressures, you end up with this category of industry clouds, which is a way of answering those things, but it's probably not the perfect answer as yet.
I hate to bring up a question that I don't have the answer to, but I think it's a valid thing for everyone in our industry to research.
Well, we've done that on the podcast before.
This won't be the first time. Almost so along the lines of what you're saying, sort of what I said at the intro, but also what Mark and that really good article talked about, I wonder if, especially with the push to cloud and multi-tenant SaaS, the one that we know is the most generic, if the vendors started doing this because they were getting complaints from a lot of customers with very specific needs in their view. It's one thing to say, you know, retail has a need for like omni-channel, linking the stores with online, with e-commerce. Pharmaceuticals needs to do all sorts of testing and supply chain stuff, but in manufacturing. So one thing to say that. It's another thing to say, well, we are a company, we think we have a secret sauce or some other kind of thing that differentiates us even further from the typical retailer. It could literally be like the secret sauce. It could be the Coke formula, you know? So I wonder if these vertical industry people were saying this move to SaaS isn't going to work for us because things are too generic and we need to be more customized than that.
One of the analysts I've talked to said all the ERP vendors are kind of facing what he called it, this complex task of threading the needle between this fit to standard characteristics of SaaS ERP with simultaneously needing to have this industry specificity, as you were saying, Dave. So I think it's, you know, it's a problem that, you know, all the vendors are going through it, and the partners, the SIs that they're working with too, are sort of facing the same issues, right?
Mm-hmm. I can't remember who exactly said this to Mark, but he drew out the inference in that piece about, so CIOs, they kind of want lifting and shifting because their businesses want more. So they've already, you know, they've made this commitment to go with AWS or Google Cloud Platform or Microsoft Azure. And he also spoke to Alibaba as well. So CIOs have done that. They've made that kind of commitment. It's an infrastructural commitment to lift and shift, but they want something more from cloud than just that. That's a real pressure on SAP, Oracle, et cetera.
I started wondering about the whole hybrid versus hosted. You know, we've gotten wise to the fact that a number of ERP vendors, SAP, I think in particular, maybe an unfair knock on them, has really been doing a lot of hosting type stuff where there's cloud characteristics to the underlying infrastructure, but it's really not multi-tenant SaaS that people are moving to. Like, let's use a really specific example of S/4HANA Cloud. But in fact, more like a hybrid that still involves a lot of on-premises stuff. So there was somebody from TTS, that's a Tata Consultancy Services, who was quoted in Mark Ambassador Jones's piece. And I thought that one of the telling comments was, it helps maximize the value from cloud for customers by choosing the right cloud deployment, service model, and migration options for them. That sounds to me like pretty good evidence that the reality is that these industry clouds, in some ways, are a repackaging of the things that the system integrators were already helping with. Big guys like, well, TCS is big, of course, Deloitte, Accenture, EY, KPMG, others, but they were already doing this kind of thing where they were maybe moving a piece to multi-tenant SaaS and then maybe adding an extension to maybe some private cloud piece or an on-premises piece. And so what Mr. Shaw at TCS was saying sounds to me very much like, at least superficially, like confirmation that this is quite a mix. These so-called industry clouds are quite a mix of deployment models, in fact. Do you think that's probably the case, or am I too far out on a limb with that?
I think it's probably the case with any of going to the cloud, that it's going to involve some amount that's going to be public cloud, some amount that's going to be, you know, probably in, as you said, sort of a hosted or hybrid environment, particularly for these large enterprises. I don't think any of them are going on any kind of a, you know, a homogenous cloud system anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's the reality.
I was starting to ask you, Jim, about Infor. You interviewed two of their top people, Kevin Samuelson,
Kevin Samuelson and
Thomas Sundaram. A fair amount of that discussion was about industry cloud, and they are the vendor I think of maybe more than any before all this industry cloud thing, mm-hmm. as being the one that was talking about their industry, their strength in industry verticals. Mm-hmm. They were emphasizing that. I thought it was out of necessity to some degree, because they had somewhat infamously, I thought, the most acquired mm-hmm. legacy ERP platforms.
Right.
So to some degree, they were, you know, doing the best with what they had. But then thinking back sort of to your discussion with those two leaders at Infor, how do you feel, given their interesting history with vertical industries, what do you think industry cloud means for them? Like, why are they doing it? And how do they perhaps differ from, let's say, a Microsoft or a Unit 4?
They just had an executive briefing last week. I think, Brian, you might have been on that too, right? So maybe you can offer something this too. But so Infor, as you said, I mean, they kind of built themselves on these on-premises platforms that were specific to certain industries, discrete manufacturing or process manufacturing, retail, healthcare. They have a big healthcare platform, which came from Lawson Software, I think, was when they acquired for that. Mm-hmm. So I don't think their cloud approach differs a lot from what they were doing before. I think from what they were saying, in previous times I talked to them, and also at this executive briefing, was they're shifting their whole sort of operations to support industry specificity for these platforms, that their whole sales, their whole sort of customer support structures are all going to be sort of industry focused. So I think they're kind of doubling down on that whole process. And they're not just going with, you know, an automotive or a food and beverage, you know, application, that they can get the industry specificity down to a brewery versus a milk production for their food and beverage applications. So they're really kind of, they're going fully into this. But as you said before, I don't think it's anything new from the industry specificity side. I think the cloud part of it is, you know, that it's allowing them to be more, maybe a little more flexible and, you know, in that approach. But certainly nothing new really from their overall approach, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I would add to that is, so they had a couple of customers in that session. One was Doug Linsmeyer, who effectively is CIO at Ping, you know, the golf company, golf equipment company. His title is something like VP Digital Technology, E-commerce and IT, but I suppose effectively is their CIO. And what was quite interesting there was they had had a homegrown ERP system, which they'd had for 18 years. And that was highly specific because it was theirs. So they were looking in a way to be less special by going with Infor. And they had a very long selection process lasting a year. And he said they'd looked at the big five, so they'd done quite an exhaustive market testing exercise to eventually get to the technology choice of Infor. One of the things that Doug Linsmeyer said was that with Infor's competitors, and this would, I guess, include Oracle and SAP, although obviously that is a guess, he was saying that there was a real red flag with some of them because they were not so good at meshing with third-party systems. You know, they want to be API first. He was saying, well, which SaaS service am I going to need next? I don't know, but I need to know that I can get to it. He's convinced, I think largely through, on his testimony, the personal relationships that they built up with the Infor team, convinced that, you know, that was the best fit really for them for that kind of technical reason. He had some other reasons for saying why they'd chosen Infor. And I suppose that's a function of cloud, isn't it? In a way, it's a function of cloud delivery, that you have that easier kind of reaching out to the other SaaS applications that you need to kind of put together the whole thing to get maybe a best-in-class SaaS application for logistics, things like that. Yeah, I thought that was interesting customer testimony there.
I think they did specify that the openness of the platform was really key. And the other ones talk about that too. I can't speak specifically to why they thought, you know, some of those other providers weren't as open, or maybe didn't have that. But certainly SAP talks about having the SAP business technology platform, which apparently, you know, allows that kind of integration too. So I think they're all talking about the same things.
Yeah, definitely, Jim. And SAP is putting huge emphasis on the BTP, isn't it? That's been an increasing thing over the last couple of years. That, it seems strategically that's very important to SAP, the business technology platform, and encouraging people to kind of build on the platform.
Along those lines, I think especially true of SAP, but I've seen it mentioned a bit with Microsoft and I think Infor, maybe a couple others. They're also talking about like horizontal linkage of the things that businesses tend to need. So it's not so industry specific, or I guess you could say it is, but it's the workflows, it's APIs, it's the connectivity across the cloud, maybe to third parties, but in some cases, maybe just to their own products, especially in the case of SAP with all those cloud platforms that they bought, like Concur. Mm-hmm. So it seems like some of this industry offering, it's not quite so vertical. It's also like, oh, we have this big cloud thing that brings in, you know, e-commerce and it's, you know, supply chain connectivity. And it's really still kind of horizontal. I guess I still have to wonder how specific it is, but it is maybe additional functionality that's maybe more integrated than what they're accustomed to, especially if they have been on premises. Jim, I was reading back at your Infor Q&A with Samuelson, and I noticed that Soma Sundaram, you did ask him about the rewriting of the legacy products, and he said it depends on the products. in certain verticals, the intellectual property and the legacy technology wasn't that great. We didn't think that taking it and refactoring for the cloud was the best idea. So those were completely rewritten, but using the design we already know. And then he said in some cases, those products were already moving toward Java or .NET, you know, the object-oriented, cloud-friendly, cloud-centric architectures for mid-market products. So we just continued. And he said, for the most part, the legacy cloud does not exist. The legacy code does not exist in the cloud. So it sounds like they are claiming to have rewritten a good chunk of their vertical systems for SaaS, multi-tenant SaaS. Mm-hmm. And he was kind of dismissive, saying basically it's really expensive to go for single tenant where you can do more customization. I think there's a little dig at SAP there because they have been known to do these cloud labeled things that are really like single tenant or hosted, you know, private cloud things where there's a lot more control. It's just hosted on a different systems data center that's maybe hosted by SAP or Google Cloud Platform or someone like that. So Aaron Tan wrote a piece about a slew of Microsoft announcements. They started, I think, with retail and healthcare in 2020. And then in April 2021, they added manufacturing, nonprofit, and a third one that escapes me at this very moment. Let me see.
Financial services? Did you mention
financial services? That's right. They added financial services. And he got some quotes, a statement from Microsoft. They referred very heavily to the partner ecosystem again. So this, again, makes me think we're looking again at the system integrators that were often the ones sweating the details of an application, an ERP's basically customizing or otherwise configuring an ERP system for a specific company in their industry. So it says Microsoft industry clouds also provide new opportunities for our partners to strengthen and extend for the last mile of industry execution. Partners bring innovation and expertise to deliver tailored solutions for unique customer needs. It still seems again like there's a lot of probably to the cost to the tune of multi-millions of dollars if you're a large company, bringing the system integrators in to make these industry clouds work and to really get them going. And so
you can't really get away from partners in this enterprise software field. I mean, you really can't.
Right.
I mean, when I talk to the SAP user group guys, they will very quickly start talking about the partners. Mm-hmm. Because you, especially maybe if you're a medium-sized company, then you need them. You don't have the expertise in-house.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's just a changing of sort of the way they might be doing their business, but it is essentially, I think, what you kind of mentioned, Dave, that they are doing essentially the same thing, maybe just a different way, cloud-oriented way, rather than, you know, specific for companies like they used to do. SAP's got, partnerships with IBM and Deloitte and others that are, you know, they're sort of touting, you know, their industry specificity for what they're doing mm-hmm. for, S/4HANA type applications, things like that.
Yeah. I can offer guys some additional context from the kind of data management side of my beats, which is maybe of some use. At a few meetings, two face-to-face and one Zoom with kind of C-level execs at some of the kind of data analytics companies, kind of doing a blog about this. I mean, what's now is that, but you know, executives are coming over to London again post-pandemic, so I'm getting base time and decent amounts of time with some of these guys. I think they all said, the three that I've got in mind here who I spoke to, one was Ashutosh Kulkarni, Ash from Elastic, he's the CEO of Elastic. Mohit Daswani, he's the CFO of ThoughtSpot, and also Chet Kapoor, who's CEO of DataStax. But they all said, now they're all analytics rather than biz apps, so, you know, but even so, this might be quite interesting to hear. They all said something about cloud that took me a little bit by surprise. I think it was a little bit unexpected. So Ash from Elastic said that, kind of off the cuff, he said, procuring infrastructure for like enterprises, for CIOs, is a nightmare. And the reason why it's a nightmare is the actual infrastructure, because there's only so much of this, right? There are only so many servers, is being bought by GCP, Microsoft, and AWS. So that, I mean, the actual boxes themselves are harder to find because of the hyperscalers, and you've got chip shortages, things like that. And that was something that hadn't really occurred to me before. Mohit Daswani from ThoughtSpot, he said he's very strongly of the view that analytics providers who don't have a strong cloud basis are actually going to decline. And he had some kind of graphs to prove this, and to do with that kind of financial performance and things like that. But he was very bullish about that. I mean, he would say that because they've made a big bet on cloud. But he mentioned some of his competitors who he thinks are really going to struggle commercially, because they haven't woken up to cloud as a completely new era, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the third one, that was Chet Kapoor from DataStax, and he said something that I just simply didn't know, which is he said, all of our customers always have two public cloud providers. They don't have three, they don't have one, they always have two. And that's for arbitrage purposes. So it's to do with economics, you know, so they play off, say, AWS and Microsoft, they play them off against each other to get the better deal.
Hmm.
I think all three of those gentlemen really kind of hammered home to me that cloud's pretty important, you know?
It's fascinating about the actual server boxes going to the hyperscalers and creating, if I understood you correctly, creating a supply issue for people who might still want to do it.
Tend to think of the cloud as sort of this unconstrained resource, right? But maybe there's more constraints than we've thought about, right?
Yeah, interesting.
It exists in data centers and in boxes within data centers. It's not.
Most of the vendors, ERP vendors that are talking about industry clouds, one of the differentiators or one of the things that makes it an industry cloud is they talk about common data models that apparently this cloud provides, or that their cloud provides. And so I think that would be, you know, like, for example, you know, retail needs all sorts of SKUs, you know, stock keeping units and all sorts of ways of handling many, many SKUs for a company. So I think they probably mean data types that are necessary for the particular industry. You know, you can easy to imagine what they would be for pharmaceuticals, let's say, versus retail. So that's one thing that makes these a bit different. Any further thoughts, guys? I do feel like it's still new enough, even though the hype certainly seems to have really gotten heavy, especially about a year and a half ago. Although you started hearing about industry clouds from some of the vendors, I think back around 2019, I get a sense that we might have to go looking a little bit for really good examples of this being implemented. You know, I still get a sense that this is being offered and that this is something that the vendors all want to show themselves as doing, and they see a business opportunity in it. But I wonder how many of customers we will see have actually done it and who say, oh, I'm on industry cloud now. Or if it's going to be also a bit of a relabeling thing, which I learned the hard way, I would say, as a reporter about Internet of Things, something that where they put a new label on something. Yes, there was some new stuff that was done, but now we're calling this thing we were doing for 15 years, now we're calling it Internet of Things, because yes, we have some IP, we have some things on the internet. Oh, we have a mobile phone. People are running smartphones in the factory floor, running a couple of apps. That's the internet part. Maybe I'm being cynical, as I often am, but I think it's going to be very interesting to kind of dig into this and get under the covers a little bit, under the hood, and see what's going on here and how well it's working out for people.
From that Infor event that we both attended, that one of the things that Kevin Samuelson, the Infor CEO, said is, you know, we're still sort of in the early innings of this cloud transition, right? So like you said, I mean, there's a long way to go, and this might just be the early part of the lineup getting up and batting, but we don't know, you know, exactly how it's going to play out in the end, right?
Of course, Jim, that metaphor is completely lost on me. I mean,
But you both follow soccer or football, so maybe we can come up with a metaphor that three of us will appreciate.
Well, yeah. There's innings in cricket. Are there innings in cricket? Is that the
No, I'm Scottish, so I know absolutely nothing about cricket. The word that really that pops into my mind is flux. I think the very term industry cloud is an indication of a market that's in flux. Sort of disruption going on, you know, on the supplier side by the rise of the hyperscalers. I know I've said this a few times, 10 years ago, they didn't even exist.
You know, I think we're coming up with you know, exposing to the world our brainstorming about possible article ideas.
10 years ago is maybe a bit of an exaggeration.
Yeah.
You see the point I'm making.
But the there's that word co-opetition, which was trendy a few years ago, and I keep using it. Maybe it's like saying groovy. You know, maybe nobody says co-opetition anymore. But based on everything you're saying, Brian, about the hyperscalers, I have to wonder if there's some good investigating to be done in the nature of that relationship and to what degree they are really feeling the competition, as often happens in tech and many, many fields of business, but I think especially in information technology, where there's so much flux, as you say, and there's so many people that are forming new partnerships, and there's technologies yes. that integrate, and boundaries are broken, are crossed, and blown away. How do the ERP vendors feel about the hyperscalers now compared to how they felt 2 or 3 years ago?
And of course, the vendor that we've not really spoken about in this podcast is Oracle.
Yeah.
Different approach. They have their own cloud infrastructure. And of course, this year, it's going to be Oracle Cloud World. That is a different approach, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's been noticeable, hasn't it, Jim, with SAP Rise, that seems to be a different cloud provider for every deal. Sometimes it's Azure, sometimes it's yeah. GCP. I know they want to get AWS on board. I don't know if they've done that yet or not. But whereas with Oracle, you know what the cloud infrastructure is.
Yeah, right. I think SAP, in that case, is just taking the choose your own cloud method. And a lot of companies, they might be choosing both of them or at least two.
Yeah, that kind of there's validation for that from what Chet Kapoor from DataStax was saying, that it's a deliberate strategy to have two.
And you don't need three because that's just too many to manage. You only need two to play off each other.
It's like two martinis.
Yeah, but I would hasten to point out, as someone who's been to varying degrees of success using the Xfinity Comcast broadband system for this discussion, there's certain fields where you don't have that ability, really. I mean, in theory, I think it's DirecTV that does satellite now, but maybe they're the only one. But you don't have the choice. It's certainly not like the so-called free market and going in and there's 15 kinds of bread and two types of bread for each brand. But interestingly, in hyperscalers, in public cloud, you can do that because I think it's relatively easy to swap them in and out in a way you can't do with cable TV
right. And
cable internet.
But in terms also of the conflict or the competition between the hyperscalers on the one hand and the big software providers on the other, there's also the personnel aspect to this, isn't there? There's so many SAP people have gone to...
Google Cloud Platform. I was reading, I think it was Rob Enslin.
Rob Enslin.
There. Yeah.
Thomas Kurian.
Thomas Kurian, yeah.
Formerly of Oracle.
He went there fairly early in this rise of the public clouds. On that wistful note, maybe this is a good place, unless someone has something further to say about the industry clouds.
Yeah, I think we've covered it.
It's a hugely interesting topic, and it really brings into focus some of the flux that's going on, which means that we will have things to write about.
We really do have things to write about. So there's a lot of questions. We brought a lot of questions to this podcast. Not as many answers as we usually do, but that's okay. I appreciate your time. And as always, guys, it's been good to chat with both of you.
Yeah, indeed. Thanks for inviting us back, David.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.